May I speak to you in the name of the living God?
You may.
In him there is no darkness at all. The night and the day are both alike. Shine in my heart, Lord Jesus. If you can't have a good time singing that hymn, they just forgot to bury you. Speaking of which, I want that sung at my funeral, but more importantly, I want it to be the last thing I hear before I shuffle off this earthly existence. I have it on good authority. The last song we hear, it's like that dumb tune that's stuck in our head all day long. The last thing we hear, we're stuck with it throughout all eternity. So you might want to hang out with folks who practice good music. Does anybody know what today is? Sunday, yeah, it's toward the end of March. What's up? I heard something. Rose Sunday, Mothering Sunday, it's sometimes called. We have they're kind of pink. They're not bright red. The tradition is to have pink flowers on Mothering Sunday. Anybody ever heard of Mothering Sunday? That's not Mother's Day. That's a whole different thing. You know, that's a Hallmark thing. Actually, Mother's Day was started in a little church in Grafton, West Virginia, for those that like that kind of information. Mothering Sunday is a whole other thing, and the truth is, it has nothing at all to do with mothers in its origin. Dating way back, the mother that was mentioned is actually Mother Church. But that's not really why we have roses there. Some people associate it like they do the third Sunday in Advent, that is the Annunciation and the lightning of the Advent season. Basically, you know, we're down the road. We've come through more than half of Lent now, and people get tired of kind of beating up on themselves and reminding themselves of their sins. So they want to lighten it up a little bit and kind of have a little recess from all that Lenten stuff. So we put some pretty flowers up and all that. Mothering Sunday did have its a resurgence in England in the time between the two world wars, and for a variety of reasons. One, that a focus on mothers, and particularly the grief of mothers who had lost children during the war, and that was a part of the popularity of having a day to think about mothering. There's about 12 other rationales for doing that, none of which have anything to do with why we're here today or anything to do with the readings. The gospel is this sort of really strange Marx Brothers Three Stooges routine where Jesus spits in the mud and wipes it in somebody's face. And it's good slapstick comedy. I'm not sure how good gospel message it is. It, of course, when you do things like that, it draws your attention away from what's really going on. In the same way that when folks were getting ready to stone the woman caught in adultery and Jesus bends over and he starts to draw in the sand. And what that does is it draws people's attention toward Jesus and away from the woman. And gives her a moment to maybe cover herself up and to regain some composure. In the same way with this story, with Jesus spitting and making mud and rubbing it in somebody's eyes, it takes the attention away from the question of, well, who sinned? This man or his parents? Or, you know, why is this bad thing happened to this guy? And Jesus sort of just takes that question off the table, saying that there's no answer to ridiculous questions like that. It's not that there's an answer, it's basically the wrong question. Equally sort of strange story in terms of how the great King David is shown. We have what in essence was the first beauty contest except it's with guys, which is just sort of nasty when I think about it. And this ruddy guy with beautiful eyes comes through at the end, and we go, king for a day. None of which is what I want us to think about today. Just put all that stuff aside. Except for the thought that all of that stuff has to do with sort of explaining things that aren't supposed to be explained, that there are no explanations. You know, how does somebody get to be blind? How does somebody get to be healed? How does somebody get to be king? How does all the stuff that is just not explainable, how do we explain it? And there's a whole laundry list of stuff that we just want to know the answers to things. Like, you know, why do mudslides come down the hill and just wipe out everything? Or why do airplanes, you know, veer off to the left and just disappear off the face of the earth? And we want explanations for that. We spend God knows how many hours of TV time trying to figure out what can't be figured out. And why do we do that? It's really deep down for very selfish reasons. I mean, we want to have things figured out and have the answer to things so that we can say, ah, now I get it. And then we can merrily go on our way living our lives uninterrupted, doing what we want to do and not be bothered with such things as mudslides and airplanes disappearing and all these bad things that happen to folks that we can't do anything about, and that there are no answers to why they happen. So what we want is a formula, something that we can apply in all these situations, an easy answer, so that we can go on being happy with ourselves. And so we turn to religion sometimes that gives us very complex rules that must be followed, and if we follow them correctly, then everything will work out just fine. We'll be happy and all is right with the world. And when all is not right with the world, these formulas will tell us why not. You know, basically, it's your fault that you were in the way of the mudslide, or you ought not have built your house by that creek that floods all the time. And it goes on and on. Or if we're uncomfortable with that, we'll just say, well, you're lucky, and you're not. A couple weeks ago, talked about how we would say, well, you're blessed because bad stuff didn't happen to you. And you, on the other hand, you know, God never much cared for how you looked. So you're done for. Formulas. Magic potions, if you will, to figure out how stuff happens so that we can go on with our lives uninterrupted. In our religious tradition, we have 10 suggestions, commandments, but let's be realistic about it. They're kind of suggestions, some more so than others. Still others, without the need of religion or anything else, luck or lack thereof, are convinced that happiness will only be obtained if we're beautiful, like young King David, or if we're rich, or if we're successful, and you may have other things to put on your list. But we want that list. Things to do, a list of things to look at in life, to focus on what is going well for us. Author, psychologist Robin Silverman has written a book called The Ten Gifts. The Ten Gifts. Much like the commandments that are 10, it gives positive guidelines to bring peace to a person's life. And that's what it's really about, the being at peace with ourselves. We say, I want to be happy, but the truth is, what we long for is a sense of peace. Her list is not a complicated list of do's and don'ts, but they're just natural ways to bring about joy and harmony in a person's life. She happens to be a deeply religious person, but she's found ways to focus on living and on living in light as opposed to darkness, as reflected in our last hymn or the epistle reading from Ephesians. Live as children of light. The fruit of light, then, is found in all that is good and is right and is true. Hear the reading again. Once you were darkness, and now in the Lord you are light. Not that you lived in darkness, but you were darkness. And now you're light. Live as children of light. For the fruit of the light is found in all that is good and right and true. So following is an adapted list and commentary on her 10 gifts. I liked the categories. I messed a little bit with her interpretation of them. Number one, the gift of warning. Warning. Danger. Anybody remember the old TV show Lost in Space? Danger will rob. Yeah, boy, the robot, you know, an early warning device. I always think that we ought to have one of those in church that goes off every time somebody's about to do something that's bad for them or for one another, you know. Danger! Imminent boundary violation. The gift of warning. It's a good thing to be warned internally, if not by others. Even better if we can be warned without benefit of other people. We need to learn to listen to our common sense, our inner promptings. And so when something makes one fearful, the best thing to do is to get quiet real quick and ask yourself, what's better than this? And if there's something that's better than this, get there. Follow the directions that are given by that still, small voice within. Number two, the gift of refuge. Refuge. When you're feeling joyless, peaceless, disquieted, find a place of refuge. It may be a physical space. It might be church. It might be your basement, your attic, your closet. It might be any number of places. It might be where you go to retreat in music or in prayer or in reading, or you know what the place of refuge is for you. Embrace it and discover a new joy by focusing on what is close to you in the present moment. Refuge. The gift of love is number three. Now think about love a moment and what it really is. Love is, I think, the absence of fear. Or at least that which begins to cast out fear. So be fearless about asking for help. Asking for the help that you want or need. Most folks aren't really good at that. Accept the good that others offer to you. That's love. And be willing to respond unconditionally with the best that you have. Number four, the gift of surrender. If life seems to be going against you, well then let it go. Let it go.
stop insisting that things have to be a certain way and be open to the wonder and awe of how wonderful they can be. Let go. Yeah, we hear that slogan, let go and let God. I recently heard a new version of it. Let go or else get drug all over the place. Surrender. Let it go. Number five, the gift of simplicity. It's a gift to be simple. It's a gift to be free. The gift of simplicity means eliminate, eliminate, eliminate. That means get rid of. Get rid of the clutter of your life. Get rid of the clutter in your heart, in your mind, in your house, in your lives. Eat simpler foods. I've decided I won't eat anything I can't pronounce. Plan fewer activities each day. Well, that flies in the face of everything. It's because, you know, we're in this society that says more, 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 more. Delegate. That's a tough one. Because if you're like me, you know that you can do it better than the rest of them. And you probably can. But they won't get any better at it unless you let them. Give away everything that you no longer need. Think about that one. Just get rid of everything you no longer need. What are you keeping it for if you don't need it? I've been very fortunate to have moved a number of times and moved far distances where you just had to get rid of it all. And I don't miss any of it. Give away everything you no longer need, and give away everything that you spend your time defending, ensuring, maintaining, or managing. The gift of action, number six. Begin anything that feels right to you. Begin anything at all that feels right to you. Now, somebody's going, wait a minute, that could get dangerous down the road. Well, that's true. I only said begin anything that feels right to you. Make a little baby step at it. Don't jump into it whole hog and then figure out, oh, this wasn't such a good idea. Make it a baby step so you won't put off doing it, first of all. And if it turns out not to be the best choice, you can easily adjust your course. But start with some action. Begin anything. Number seven is the gift of return. Return. Instead of always worrying about what others think of you, get comfortable with who you are right now. Let yourself return home. And welcome yourself home and do the same to others. Don't worry about what others think of you. I recently saw this slogan posted on the internet. There's some junk on the internet, but sometimes there's some good stuff too. And it said that, you know, what other people think of you is none of your business. I love that. It's none of my business what you think of me. It's a lot of my business what I think of me. Of course, the return of that is some grace for you, as it's, you know, not just none of my business what you think of me. It's none of your business what I think of you. The gift of commitment, number eight. Decide where and how you're going to spend your energy. Ask yourself, who do I want to be? Who do I want to be? Be it. Just be it. Don't decide who you want to be someday. decide who you want to be right now and just be it. And keep making the same choice over and over and over and over and over and over again, no matter what others say. Commit to your values, your abilities, your nature, and your ideas. Number 9, coming down the home stretch. The gift of trust. Begin treating all of your relationships and encounters as holy encounters. Assume that each one is meant as a gift or an opportunity to show you your own light to the world. The gift of trust. Trust that you're holy, and that all around you is holy. And last but not least, the gift of thanks. Now, a couple weeks ago, I told you to not count your blessings, because that only focuses on all the things that are going well for you. And particularly don't count them out loud, because that just really makes other people mad. Rather than counting your blessings, count the opportunities in which you can be a blessing to someone else. Count those things. But certainly be thankful. Be thankful for what you have, for who you are. And pray a lot. And give thanks. And find the good that is around you and praise it. For as our lesson tells us, for once you were darkness, but now in the Lord you are light. Live as children of light. For the fruit of the light is found in all that is good and right and true. And try to find out what is pleasing to the Lord.